Welcome to today's interview on Brightown.com. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brightown. And as you know, I am a longtime Second Amendment supporter. I mean, supporter doesn't even accurately describe. I mean, I wholeheartedly know that the Second Amendment is the single most important right that protects all the other rights in this nation. And today we have a special guest joining us about a special program called Firearms and Freedoms. And this is a free to watch, you need to register, but it's a free to watch multi-part series. Go to firearmsandfreedoms.com if you want to check it out. And our guest today is the host of this program, James Saccomanno, is here to talk to us about the production of all this. Welcome, James. It's great to have you on.
Mike, thanks so much. I appreciate it. Really happy to be here.
Well, thank you for taking the time to join us. And I know you've put a tremendous amount of work into this multi-part program. So tell us about this project. I know Jeff Hayes is involved as well, or it's his project. You're the host. Tell us about Firearms and Freedoms. Why is this worth watching?
Well, why is it worth watching? I mean, if you are a believer in freedoms, a believer in the Second Amendment, a believer in the right to self-defense, then it's very much worth watching. We wanted to take, you know, everything's become so divided at this point. We wanted to try to have a real conversation on the Second Amendment, not get too far off on one end, but really look at the data. We wanted to see who is the American gun owner. You know, it's not, as I say, it's not a bunch of white guys in Idaho. The American gun owner looks like everybody. When I started this, I thought, that's the first thing we should do is identify the American gun owner. And it's everybody, black, white, Hispanic, Native, Asian, gay, straight, trans.
Lots of women who own guns.
Lots of them. In fact, that's the fastest growing group of gun owners are black women. So that was an interesting thing. There's over 100 million gun owners in this country, and mainstream media is censoring us.
Yes.
And so we wanted to just really have conversations about what's really going on. And we interviewed, you know, the hard ones. We interviewed victims, people who've been victims of violent crime, domestic abuse. We interviewed police. I was surprised to find the police viewpoint on armed civilians. We interviewed military, politicians, the attorney generals. John Lott was fortunate. We were very blessed to have John Lott spend time with us because if you want the data, he's been the guy for decades, and he's just raw data. And whatever argument the pro-restriction side wants to put out, he, with no emotion, will just look at the data to say if it's right or wrong. So I
see, I'm on your page right now looking at some of the guests. I see you've interviewed J.P. Sears, the comedian who's amazing, Tucker Max, Kendra Geronimo here, sex trafficking survivor and women's safety advocate. That must have been quite an interesting discussion.
Yeah, Kendra was really interesting. And it really puts across that whole notion of it can happen to anyone at any time. You know, Kendra was in Florida vacationing, met another couple who, you know, it seemed fun. Let's all go out. And next thing she knows, she's in the back of a van with a staring down the barrel of a pistol with a guy saying, "You're not going to be a problem, right?"
Wow.
And it took months and moved her through different states for her to get out of that.
Jeez.
That's like a, right? That's a movie script.
Yeah, like a horror film script.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, this is, so how many people in total did you interview for this series?
We interviewed just over 60. It was really fascinating. And some of the stories, you brought up Kendra. We had some other women who've been victims. We had some people who have used their gun to stop crimes and to save lives, which really, if I can say, Mike, that was the nexus of the whole series, was Jeff of Jeff Hayes Films. Jeff stumbled on a statistic about how many times a legally carrying citizen stops a crime in this country with their weapon. And the number's staggering. Depending which statistic you look at and how they measure it, on the low end, it's still well over 500,000 a year. And on the high end, it's over 2 million a year.
Oh, yeah.
And when Jeff saw that, he just went, okay, there's a significant side of this story that hasn't been looked at. And
This is critical to get this out there because, of course, the media narrative is so distorted and deliberately false. They try to say that guns, they say, cause crime, when actually guns stop crime more than anything else. In fact, this is my next question to you. These days, with a lot of city councils and mayors and so on in certain cities defunding police, even when police have positive intentions, if they're defunded, they don't have the personnel. They don't have maybe the ammo to do the training that's required to maintain proficiency. And so in many cities, you are your own first responder. Is that not true?
That's very true. And the hubris of all that, because many of these politicians that are defunding the police all insist on having armed security around them.
Exactly.
Right? So it's the hypocrisy in it. You know, let's really look at facts. Do we have a violence issue in this country? I would say yes. Is it the tool? Is it the gun? That's such an easy way out, right? Mental health is a hard, hard issue.
Absolutely.
So it's so much easier to just point at the gun. Anytime there's a mass shooting, a school, you know, something that really makes a splash, politicians all want to put out feel-good legislation, so it seems like they're doing something. But when you really dig into it, does more gun restriction make a difference? Because we all know the bad guys aren't going to give up their guns. So
right.
you're restricting, by definition. Yeah, you're restricting the lawful citizen from their right to self-defense.
That's right. That's right. And there's a lot of push to eliminate guns in the hands of law-abiding citizens, especially in states like Washington and Oregon. Of course, California is notorious for that. Illinois, New York, you name it. But there's also a lot of expansion of recognized rights let's say, permitless concealed carry in Florida, for example. That just happened. And, you know, I live in Texas, and even though I do have a concealed carry permit, it's not necessary for other people to carry. And I see open carry. Because I live in central Texas, it's a normal part of society, and we don't have shooters that make a lot of headway around here. They might start something, and then a bunch of citizens, you know, finish that thing, you know, really quickly. Or the sheriff's deputies show up and they finish it, you know. So the gun culture makes us safer.
94% of mass shootings happen in gun-free zones.
Exactly.
Don't you think there's a reason for that?
Yeah, exactly. All right. Okay, let me give an overview for the people watching. So again, the website is firearmsandfreedoms.com. You can register. You put, I guess, looks like your name and your email address, and then you can watch 9 episodes. Now, this might typically be, there is a back end of things for sale. I think DVDs or digital downloads, a transcript, and so on. It's optional, though. You can watch the series for free. We are not an affiliate of this program, folks, although that would typically be a common arrangement. To my knowledge, we don't have any affiliate arrangement at all. I'm just giving you the straight website. But I will ask you, though, by the way, one favor here, James. Could you put us in touch with people like Tucker Max? Because especially people in the Texas area, I would really love to invite them to my studio, have an in-person interview on a pro-Second Amendment guest. Is that, would it be fair for me to ask a little bit of help in that area? Could you put us in touch?
Sure. I'll reach out. He was so great. And it was actually one of the moments. I had so many moments in these interviews that really stuck out to me. But talking to Tucker, and if you know Tucker, he's pretty extreme in everything. That's part of why we love him. And, you know, so he went from getting a gun to having an arsenal, but he talks about, you know, having the right to defend himself and where he is with his ranch. But towards the end of it, he said, look, I pray to God that in 40 years, I'm putting all those guns away without ever having to use them.
Right.
And there was real emotion in him. So that's a good guy. That's the guy you want to be armed, because if something goes down and he's around, he's going to handle it.
Yeah, for sure. Well, and that's the way we all roll around here. I mean, I'm conducting this interview, obviously, armed. Every day I'm armed. And I have been since, I think, about 1995, actually, James. I've been, what does that make me? An old guy, I think, is what that's called. But an old guy who knows how to carry. But I'm not alone anymore, right? It used to be maybe considered crazy to carry a gun back in the 1990s for a lot of people. Now it's like, whoa, you have to defend yourself, your family, your community, other law-abiding citizens, because violence can strike at any time, anywhere.
Yeah, I spoke to so many people who 3 years ago didn't see themselves owning a gun. And then watching what happened with lockdowns, with our freedoms being stripped away, with the censorship, people started to move towards buying guns and realizing they were their own first responder. One of the great quotes I heard during this project, Mike, was, when seconds count, the police are only minutes away.
Yeah, I love that quote.
And
so true.
Because we believe, we're full supporters of the police. They have a very difficult job, and that they're only minutes away is phenomenal, right? But seconds count.
There's only so much the cops can do. And yeah, I've trained with many cops, and I have trained cops on different skill sets, such as like edge weapons and gun takeaways and things like that. Cops have the hardest job, I think, in the world, especially these days, because they attempt to do their job, and then there's 10 people with video cameras filming them, trying to make them look bad, trying to selectively edit what they do. And I keep reminding people that thin blue line is thinner than you think. If you don't have cops in your city collapses into chaos in hours. You should pray to God that you have cops willing to show up and do their jobs, because the minute they decide not to do that, you don't have a civilization. It's that simple.
Yeah. Society, we talked about this with a couple people, in particular, Tim Kennedy. Society, civilization is a lot more fragile than we like to think. You just look where there's been, a disaster. What happened in Katrina? What happens with riots, the George Floyd? Things go sideways and south really fast, and it doesn't take a lot.
That's right.
I mean, you know, sorry to say, LA, but if the Lakers win the championship, half the time you guys burn the city. I mean, that's not a disaster. That should be a celebration. But society is a lot more fragile than we like to believe.
Yeah, that's so true. Now, I'm on your website. You've got Navy SEALs, law enforcement officers, entrepreneurs, activists, rappers, mothers, fathers, and so on. These are all kinds of different people that you've interviewed for this. Yeah, there's the whole list right there. Comedians, advocates, writers. I want to get to the emphasis that this is such a huge cross-section of society. You know, in contrast to the way the media tries to paint gun owners as somehow radicals or extremists or bad people, in fact, gun owners and people who carry guns are the best people of society. They are the law-abiding citizens. They are the ones who care the most about themselves, their communities, their families, and the people around them. Would you agree with that statement?
Very much so. And I that really came home in talking to all these people, because they talk about the gun ownership community as community. And these are, like I said, Black, white, Hispanic, Asian, Native, gay, straight, whatever. They see themselves as a community. And they talk about when they go to the range, how, you know, the first time they go to the range, a woman, she's nervous, she's uncomfortable, and she is embraced. And a lot of it, when they decide to get a firearm, what really gets them involved is not just the idea of safety, but that idea of community. That feeling of community is very important to them.
Yes. Yeah, you get that when you train. You know, if maybe you go to a local gun range, and usually what I've found is that the people at the gun range, whether they work there or they're other customers, they're very polite. They're very helpful. They are friendly. If you have a question, there's like 12 guys there ready to answer your question. Trust
right.
me.
Yeah.
Or if your gun jams and you don't know what to do, if you're a noob, like, someone will help you clear the jam. No question.
Yeah, and it doesn't matter the race, color, creed,
That's
orientation,
right.
gender. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. No, you're exactly right. In fact, I'm glad you bring that up because I've been trying to find somebody from like the gay community who's pro Second Amendment. There are groups out there I've heard of, like Pink Pistols, I think, to do an interview.
We interviewed Pink Pistols.
Did you?
Yeah.
Oh, well, see, now I got to ask you for a contact there because I've been trying to do that. But, I see with all this, there's a lot of attempted cultural division with media narratives between trans and non-trans or gays and straight. And that's the media trying to get people to fight. But right. we have so much in common, which is like we deserve to be safe in our communities, regardless of our beliefs or backgrounds. And do you find the LGBT community, is that a growing contingent of gun owners in America? Or is anybody tracking that?
They're in all 50 states.
But I mean, is it expanding more than other groups? Any idea?
Black women are the fastest growing, but the LGBT group, they're growing quite rapidly.
Yeah.
It's a basic right to self-defense.
Right.
I mean, really, I've talked to women who've been victims of horrific crime. I mean, I broke down on camera a couple times listening to stories, and I want to say it. And I've asked them, I said, when you sit across from somebody that is anti-gun and doesn't think you to have should have a weapon, when you tell them their story, I don't know how they could possibly then look at you and go, you don't have the right to have a gun.
Exactly.
And she says, oh, they do. They just, I'm sorry that happened to you, but you don't have that right.
Well,
I don't understand it.
Now let's go beyond just the word gun. Let's talk about rifles because, gun, I know it encompasses all of it, but when you talk about gun, a lot of people assume, okay, a pistol. And, pistol's portable, it's perhaps, easier to carry, easier to store and what have you. But, a rifle gets the job done better. A rifle's easier to learn, by the way. A rifle's easier to get your sight picture if you have a red dot sight. You don't need to figure out which eye and this and that. And a rifle's easier to hold steady. It's got more points of contact on your body. How much of this, did you even get into this in your docuseries about AR-15s?
We did. And the AR-15 is such an interesting topic because it's a semi-automatic weapon, right? It looks, it's almost like everyone wants to portray it as a machine gun because, if you watch TV shows, the bad guys all have machine guns when nobody's out there shooting people up with machine guns. So it's the way it looks. It's a higher capacity magazine, but like I interviewed one former chief of police and I was asking him in all sincerity, I said, look, trying to find some common ground, like, is there a gun restriction you could live with? Like who really needs a 30 round magazine? And he leaned forward in his chair and about put his finger in my chest and said, you do. And here's why. A home invasion. These are pros and there's going to be more than one of them. They know what they're doing. You may go to the range and shoot under real clear, calm conditions, but you've never had to shoot when you're woken up in the middle of the night, you're scared to death, your kids are in the other room,
right.
and there's five guys. You are not going to hit what you're aiming at. You need all those rounds. Like, how's that for an answer?
Yeah, and a spare mag on top of that.
Right.
By the way, 30 rounds goes very quickly when you're freaking out.
Yeah. that was from a chief of police.
Yeah. Well, the cops I know are all pro Second Amendment.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, because the ones I interviewed all said, look, the sad truth of the matter is we're there to do the paperwork.
Right. Right. And this is something that, of course, the founding fathers of our nation saw as so critical. They put it in the Bill of Rights, right after the First Amendment. Freedom of expression, freedom of religious expression, freedom to publicly demonstrate peacefully against the government, for example. That's all First Amendment. And backing that up is the Second Amendment right to keep and bear arms. Now, We have a Supreme Court in place right now that seems very favorable. We have an ATF that is, in my opinion, rogue, out of control, trying to ban arm brace pistols. I mean, that's, they've already, you know, put that on the books. I know there are a lot of lawsuits, but you know, with some key decisions recently by the Supreme Court, it seems like we're actually experiencing kind of a renaissance of recognition of gun ownership rights in America, are we not?
Very much so. I mean, you mentioned constitutional carry earlier. It's now over half states, right?
That's awesome.
So it's the mainstream media. Like you said, you know, there's over 100 million gun owners. They deserve a voice. There's over 15 million hunters. You brought up rifles. And these are lawful, legal, upstanding citizens. But I saw a black woman the other day was really angry at the media because she says, you know, every time they just always paint blacks and guns as a negative.
Right.
They don't. She said, look, the fastest growing group is black women. You know, I interviewed a young man, Michael Waller. He's only 27, and twice he has had to pull and use his gun to save his child and himself in a random shooting at 3 in the afternoon.
Really?
And then at a bar restaurant where guys walked in with masks, guns, and so he twice has had to use his weapon, but he saved lives.
Now, there's a very famous case that was just decided in Austin, Texas. Sergeant Daniel Perry was convicted by a jury for what I think every rational person would consider a self-defense shooting. The governor of Texas has said he's planning on approving a pardon once the board of pardons has to make that decision first. But the governor of Texas will sign that pardon, and we are all, you know, of course, cheering that fact. But it shouldn't take a pardon when it's such a clear-cut case. I mean, I know you don't want to get into, let's say, you know, politics, but isn't that a clear example of a self-defense shooting where, for whatever reason, a local jury was so distorted that they wouldn't recognize the man's right to defend himself?
Yeah, like I said, the narrative from the mainstream media is so strong that, you know, that decision there in Austin, but we just had one in New York that to me was so much of what's going on in New York is ludicrous, and I love New York. But a gentleman, and it's all on camera, a gentleman that was working security at a parking garage, somebody came in with a gun, tried to steal it. He engaged. The guy got shot twice and managed to get the gun away from the assailant, shoot him. He gets arrested. He's charged with aggravated assault, attempted murder.
That's crazy.
And illegally having a handgun.
That's crazy.
He literally took the handgun away from the guy that shot him twice, and they're charging him.
Just unbelievable.
Yeah. Like to think the best of everybody, so I think there's people who just think the only way we solve this is to take all the guns away. It's the only way we solve it. But
except you can't. You can't take all the guns away, even if that were a solution, which it isn't, but you can't practically achieve that. But
Sean Whalen, we interviewed him of Lions Not Sheep, and he said it so succinctly. He said, look, there's over 400 million guns in this country. You're not going to get them. So what we need to figure out how to do is to normalize them, to educate.
I think there's 400 million guns in Texas, by the way. That stat may need to be updated. At least based on the people that I know, but the website is firearmsandfreedoms.com. Folks can register there, again, name and email address, and you'll be able to watch the episodes, and that's beginning very shortly. I do want to mention to you, James, I hope after this runs, we have a special program launching on brighteon.com where we're going to be running educational content 24/7 with registration required. We would love to talk to you, you know, maybe a couple months later, like a rerun of this.
That'd be great.
We would love to run it on our Brighteon educational platform. And you'd still get the registrations and so on, the same terms and everything. But let's make sure that we have a conversation about that, because I we have a lot of content lined up, but it's mostly, you know, health freedom and you know, some of it's financial freedom, but we don't have a Second Amendment program on there. We got to get you.
We got you covered. Okay. I appreciate it. It's called Ammunition for Debate, because we want to arm people with the salient facts, and so that if they have a discussion with somebody, and we're encouraging everyone to get involved. This is a Second Amendment right, and people, there are powerful people that want to take it away. And yeah. Once a right's taken away, it never comes back. So
that's right.
We got to get involved.
No, I lived through the 1994 AR-15 ban, the 10-year ban that ended in 2004, and you know, it was so difficult. You had to get a pre-ban rifle at that time. You know, you couldn't get a new one, and the prices were insane. Of course, now, you know, people can go to, you know, Palmetto State Armory and get a pretty good, you know, a pretty good AR for what, like $500 or something, or there are other manufacturers out there as well. I don't mean to just mention one. I mean, there are ways to get affordable firearms, but people practice, learn proficiency and safety. It's not about just owning a gun and sticking it on a shelf. You need to know how to run it, how to clear it, how to carry it, how to keep your finger off the trigger. People, please keep your fingers off the trigger until you are ready to fire. But it's about training, isn't it?
It is so much about training. It is a huge responsibility to own a firearm.
It is.
And then if you are going to carry it in public, that responsibility goes up tenfold. Train and know what you're doing, and train under adverse conditions. Don't just go shoot on a clear, sunny day. Get instruction. It's vital, because otherwise, what we would hate to see, because I asked everybody, you know, if everybody agreed with that we should train, and I asked, should we mandate training then? And they all, just about everybody came out of their chair, went no, because once you mandate training, then you put the power back into the government, the state government, local government, federal, to decide if you can have a gun, because they can make it too expensive, too cumbersome, too time consuming.
Well, let me give you a specific example of that underscores that very point. A friend of mine, who I actually attended this was years ago when I first got my concealed carry in Texas. A friend of mine had cerebral palsy, and he lacked fine motor control. But he, of course, as an American, he has a right to have a gun, especially since he has a physical, you know, handicap that could make him more vulnerable in the
more
eyes of certain people.
Sure.
So he has a right to have a gun. Well, if the proficiency test is too strict, a man like that would never be able to pass it, because he could, you know, he could hold the gun and he could... It wasn't as stable as, you know, let's say a competitive shooter, but he still got most of the rounds in that paper target at 10 feet away or whatever was required. But if that had been made more strict, he would have been denied the right to carry a gun. And he is a person who has a special need for self-defense. And he's responsible. Yeah, he's not going to just wave it and fire randomly at a crowd. No, but he has a right to defend himself.
And we're trying to take pistol braces away from him.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Good point. He could have used a pistol brace.
A lot of people who use a pistol brace use it because they have a handicap of some sort.
Exactly.
And that used to be the group that the left, if I can say the left, used to protect at all costs. What's going on now?
Yeah. No, I know. And also women. So the shorter barrel AR pistol, let's say a 10.5-inch barrel with an arm brace on it, is really perfect for a lot of women, especially on the older side. They may not have, you know, the shoulder strength to hold up a full-length AR, especially if you've got, you know, lights on it or whatever.
Right.
It's the arm brace situation is perfect for a lot of women.
Very much. Yeah, very true.
So here's the ATF taking away women's right to self-defense.
Yeah, and it's like wherever they can chip away, they're looking to chip away. And then, like I said, when you dive into the real data, one of the things I really liked about John Lott is he's a researcher. He's an academic. He got into this. This really isn't what he wants to be spending all his time on, but there was a need. He's a high quality researcher. He years ago dug into the data, real data, and decided more guns make us safer.
That's right.
And
more guns, less crime.
Yeah. So he's been the guy testifying in front of Congress and states, et cetera, for a long time. But it's not that he's this gun nut. He's an academic, and they've asked him questions. So he looks at the data and says, here's the real answer.
Yep, exactly. And he's exactly right. I mean, more guns does equal less crime. And, you know, I'm blessed. I've carried for almost 30 years. Not once have I ever felt that I needed to even draw
a pistol. Yeah, we pray you don't have to.
Right.
But
right. But that's also because I'm willing to just say, oh, I'm sorry, my fault, and back away and de-escalate. That's the other side of this, which is what responsible gun owners and carriers do. You don't want to feed into an escalation of a problem. If somebody's having a bad day and they're giving you crap, just say, hey, sorry, I'm sorry you're having a bad day. Or you don't even have to say that. Just, I'm sorry, my bad, yeah. Move along.
Yeah, it's easy, right?
Right.
But if I'm at the mall and somebody with a mental illness starts shooting, I want you there.
Yes.
I hope you're there shopping that same day.
Yeah, you do want me there, actually, given how much training I put into this over the years. But again, probably will never, ever have to use it. But you know, and thank God, because we don't want to ever have to deploy firearms, because
no.
We want to live in societies that are safe, and we want mental illness to be reduced. We want people to get the help that they need, and we also want the messages of society and media and culture to not make people mentally ill. That's the other problem today. I know that's outside your documentary, but that's going on.
No, we definitely talked about that, because everyone wants to blame the tool, but when the majority of gun deaths are suicides, is that really the fault of the tool? Or is that a mental illness, a depression, socioeconomic? It's the really hard questions.
Yeah.
So we interviewed a gentleman who's in the third generation in the gun industry. And what I loved about Mike is he looked at this, and instead of saying it's not, you know, when the anti-gunners point at the gun owners with suicides, he said, look, it's not us, but maybe we can do something to help.
Yeah,
and he created a whole foundation. He's got manufacturers involved. There's an anonymous mental health survey you can take that's being put in boxes when you buy a new gun or holster, ammunition.
Is that right? Really?
He's leading us. He's got, you know, therapists on board. And so this is somebody in the gun. There are people in the gun community who are going, suicide's an issue. It's not the guns issue, but we're part of this community. We're part of this country. We want to do something to help.
Well, absolutely. But it's funny that you mentioned, so this is a survey being put in when you buy a new gun.
Yeah.
You know, I'm already sitting on a collection of these gun locks, of course, that we get with every new firearm that we purchase. Like, does anybody ever use? I don't use, I don't have children. My guns are not locked. My guns are loaded. But I understand what I'm doing with them.
Right.
But for other people, I understand locking them is a choice they wish to make. I don't. I just have a pile of locks with nothing to do with those.
Yeah.
But nevertheless,
If you have children, you would train them. You would teach
exactly.
them. They would know exactly what those are. And that's, you know, education is key. I want to say one real quick thing.
Please
as
do.
Well. We've been talking about the self-defense aspect of gun ownership. But like I mentioned, hunting, there's over 15 million hunters in this country. They deserve a voice. And shooting as a recreation, you've spent enough time at the range. You know all kinds of people that go to the range purely for recreation.
Oh, yeah.
We interviewed a woman who's an Olympian, I think two-time Olympian in the biathlon. So shooting to her has given her a life she way beyond what she expected as a child. She's gone all over the world. She's competed in Olympics. You know, it's funny, here in this country where everyone has guns, nobody goes to the biathlon. In Europe, the biathlon, we're in a country where nobody has guns, 60,000 people show up to watch the biathlon.
That's funny.
I mean, so firearms as recreation is a huge thing.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, I'm a long range shooter, and it's an incredible science and art. And you can spend a lifetime to try to master long range shooting.
Mastery of self in any discipline is
absolutely
so worthwhile.
Yeah. And for those watching, I mean, it's not just shooting a piece of paper 20 feet away. You know, we're talking about, you know, 1,000 yards, and you gotta compensate for spin drift and windage and wind angle and everything, the friction of the bullet, you name it. And it's a science. I mean, it's actually very intellectually stimulating. That's why I enjoy it.
Sure. You're into physics and engineering.
Yep.
I mean, that's.
Yeah, totally. It's right in my wheelhouse, because, you know, the ballistics calculations for long range shooting are just, they're a lot of fun. And the reward of being on target, you know, at 1,000 yards, to get it on a target that's like less than 36 inches wide is very rewarding, you know, because there's a lot of leeway there.
Yeah. So again, just as recreation, it's a huge thing. You know, archery. Right?
Archery, yeah, absolutely.
It's the same thing. It's that self-mastery. So blaming the tool is just such an easy way out. More restrictions. It's always feel good. It doesn't get to the root of the problem. You know, we just had some tech giant in San Francisco stabbed to death.
Oh, yeah. I saw that. Bill Lee was his name?
Right. Yeah.
The Cash App guy.
Yeah. So Tim Larkin, who's down in Vegas, former special ops, SEAL, CIA, you know, he told me stabbings are way up in Las Vegas.
Oh, man.
So we have a violence issue.
Yeah.
It's not the tool, but if you want to be able to protect yourself, you should have that right.
Well, absolutely. Yeah. And San Francisco is becoming very, very violent. And it's an anti-gun.
Breaks my heart.
Absolutely.
I grew up there. It breaks my heart.
Oh, you grew up there?
Yeah.
Wow. Well, yeah, it was once a great city. I used to go down to Fisherman's Wharf. I used to go to Piccadilly Square, I think it was. And I used to get fudge there, like the fudge factory.
Ghirardelli.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I forgot what it's called.
Ghirardelli Square.
Ghirardelli. Yeah. Yeah. Ghirardelli. Sorry. It's been a while, but it was a fun town. You know, ride the trolley, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And now it's like, forget it. I mean, anyway, look, we're getting off track. Let me just wrap this up and bring it back. The website is firearmsandfreedoms.com. And folks, you can just register. You can watch all the episodes at no charge. And you'll be supporting this organization if you choose to purchase something, which is optional. But if you do, it'll go to projects like this, I assume. And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to work with James here and see if we can rerun this program on Brighteon at some future date. Registration will still be required, so it's the same setup, but we would like to run it. And thank you, James, for taking the time to join us today. It's been a lot of fun speaking with
Mike,
you.
Mike, really a delight. I thank you so much. And let's work together.
Let's do it. Okay, hang on after this so I can get your direct contact information. But folks, Second Amendment right is critical for protecting every other right that you have. And in a time when our rights are eroding deliberately by the powers that be, it is critical to support this right as well as your First Amendment and Fourth and Fifth, you know, as well. Nobody cares that much about the Third Amendment at the moment. Nobody's quartering British soldiers in homes on the East Coast. But nevertheless, all the amendments are worth defending and protecting. So thank you for watching today. I'm Mike Adams here, the founder of Brighteon.com, the free speech platform that I built so that we can have uncensored conversations just like this one. God bless you all. God bless America. Take care. All right, hope you enjoyed that interview. Now, a related sponsor worth mentioning here, a company that I really like is shieldarms.com, because they have the folding AR-15 rifles. I've got their website up, shieldarms.com, and you can see here they have this thing called the SA-15 folding. If you click on that, you'll see they have a patented receiver that has a folding mechanism that's very good. I own one of these, And I, in fact, I've done a video testing it and showing firing it. It's a great way to have a more mobile AR-15. Of course, check your local laws, make sure you're compliant with all your local laws. But you know, sometimes a full-length AR may not be as convenient to transport or to have in a vehicle where legal for self-defense purposes. And this provides a really great solution. It's also easier to put in a like a backpack or something if you're hiking into a you know, the outback, a dangerous area. This can potentially save your life. So check it out, shieldarms.com. And if you use discount code Ranger, I'm pretty sure you get a discount on a rifle there. I think it might be $100. I'm not sure exactly. I can't keep track of all the discounts, but try discount code Ranger. I think you get $100 off, and you're going to get a really awesome high-end firearm that, again, has this patented special receiver folding mechanism. So pretty good. Otherwise, the rest of the rifle is all, you know, AR-15 standard mil-spec parts. So very, very easy to use, you know, compatible with all your other parts. It's a good company, shieldarms.com. A global reset is coming, and that's why I've recorded a new 9-hour audiobook. It's called The Global Reset Survival Guide. You can download it for free by subscribing to the naturalnews.com email newsletter, which is also free. I'll describe how the monetary system fails. I also cover emergency medicine and first aid and what to buy to help you avoid infections. So download this guide. It's free. It's my gift to you simply because I want like-minded people to survive.